Like many leagues, the Greater Toronto Hockey League is looking inward to try to find ways to deal with issues of racism and discrimination in minor hockey. And this is not new for the GTHL. Last year, they hosted a gathering named the Summit on Culture, Inclusivity, and Diversity. Kim Davis spoke at that summit. She's the NHL Executive VP of Social Impact. And there are new announcements that are just being made right now by the GTHL. And here to outline some of those is the Executive Director and CEO of the GTHL, Scott Oakman. Scott, thanks so much for doing this today. How are you?
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all ours. And this press release just coming out moments ago, detailing mainly how you plan to tackle the issue of racism in the sport. I know you've started this before with the summit last year, and I find a particular interest, these virtual town halls you'll be putting together for players and parents and coaches and other people involved in the game. In this press release, and we'll get there, you detail a lot of, let's just say, penalties that were assessed based on race, religion, sexual orientation, gender, and disability. But first, why now? Why is the GTHL doing this, trying to examine how to curb discrimination in minor hockey?
Well, I think, as you stated off the top, Jeff, that we've recognized for a while that we represent a jurisdiction that's very diverse in nature. And about a year and a half ago, we started on the path of planning a summit to focus on how we can be better as an organization, improving the culture that kids play in while becoming more diverse and inclusive and welcoming to players and families that are in the game already or aren't in the game. So that resulted in a number of strategic tasks that we're working on right now. And obviously, with world events as they are, a number of really important issues around race has come to the forefront. And it's really required us to do some self-reflection on perhaps we need to expedite a lot of the work that is underway. Mm-hmm. And so we've done that with some of the things that are being announced today. And are really looking for outside people with expertise in these areas to help us on our journey to become better at what we do and make the environment for players of color and all players the best it can be.
So, Scott, before I turn this over to Anthony Stewart and Brian Burke here, and we'll get their thoughts and questions, what is it exactly that you are announcing today?
So we've announced, along with putting the statistics out for the last 3 years, in terms of penalties that have been assessed under the suspension coding that we have for discriminatory taunts or slurs, we're announcing that we'll be hosting a town hall to provide an opportunity for players and families to have their voices heard in a public way, to talk to us and inform the second part of the announcement that we're making about their experiences and give them an opportunity in a very safe way and to speak about what has happened to them and the experiences that they have so we can learn from that and become better and stronger. The second piece of that is we're forming an independent committee that will be co-chaired by two people who have agreed to do it, but they're just in the process of getting the necessary consents from the people that they work for to be part of this. And we're asking them to put together a group of people to look at things like how we currently deal with penalized players that are penalized for discriminatory slurs or taunts, look at how we currently deal with allegations that aren't heard by officials and make recommendations on how we should be dealing with them, looking at how we deal with allegations of racism and discrimination by spectators, parents, etc., and how we should be dealing with them. We're looking for them to also review some of the or all of the educational materials that we use for parents, players, and coaches, and asking for recommendations from them on how we can improve in that area. we're asking them to review our policy on public reporting of this information and asking them for recommendations on what we should be doing in that realm. And then finally, we're asking them to put together some recommendations on how we can improve and increase diversity in the leadership positions across the league, right from our board of directors, our staff, organization, our coaches. So we're looking for them. It's certainly a big task, and the two individuals we're looking to support us on this are extremely energized to do this work, and we're hopeful that we'll have an announcement on who they are very soon.
With the executive director and CEO of the GTHL, Scott Oakman. Anthony Stewart, over to you.
Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Anthony. It's great to talk to you.
Good. A couple players have been critical, NHL players and former GTHL players have been pretty critical of the process and the policy of the past. Have you had a chance to reach out to them or speak to them? And if not, what would be your message to those former players?
Anthony, that's a great question. I've heard, I think sort of the world events and this subject matter has certainly empowered people to come forward and speak up on this matter. And I've had many private conversations with current and former players. I've had conversations with parents of current and former players, both NHL, former NHL and current NHL fathers and mothers, as well as some players. There's a number of that players that I've reached out to, and we've been back and forth on email and haven't yet to connect with. So, but it's important to us. Our alumni are incredibly important to us. We have a number of them that come back to our organization after their playing days are done to support the programming and be role models for the kids that they're coaching. So our relationship with them is extremely important. And, I appreciate their leadership. And I think the formation of the Hockey Diversity Alliance, and if you look at the leadership, the executive group of that group, an overwhelming majority of those players are GTHL alumni. And so they've taken on a leadership position in a very important issue. And we're looking forward to speaking with them and others who we haven't spoken with and want to continue the conversations as we go forward to get their thoughts on the best way for us to move forward.
Berkey?
Hey, Scott, it's Brian Burke. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Brian.
And thank you for this important work. So last year, so forget what changes will be made. Last year, is it a zero tolerance policy if an official hears the comment?
It has been a zero tolerance policy for a very long time, Brian. And I think the challenge we've had is not dealing with the ones that are heard. And certainly we're open to dialogue on how we have dealt with them. But the bigger challenges for us are the ones that aren't heard by the officials and how we approach those. So we do what we can in that realm. It is challenging often to deal with that, and we're hopeful that this independent committee can maybe provide us some direction on how we can be better in that way.
And this would cover racial slurs or LGBTQ comments, anything like that?
That's correct. Any race, religion, sexual orientation, gender, disability comments.
That's awesome. Are the parents a big part of the problem here?
I think we're really focused right now on the player side, the participant side. We do have incidences with spectators, but I'm hearing more and more from parents who have had encounters that put them in a very difficult position, and they feel very uncomfortable coming forward because of the repercussions they fear that their child will have if they speak up, because their child or they have been subjected to a racist situation or discriminatory situation. So one of the important things for us is to create a mechanism so families feel safe to come forward and talk to us and feel comfortable and safe that their issues are going to be taken seriously and their childhood is going to be protected from any repercussions, and that we have a mechanism in place to properly deal with their concerns.
This is really important work. Press on. Good luck.
Thanks, Brian.
This is you're hearing Scott Oakman, Executive Director and CEO of the GTHL, joining us on Hockey Central Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And just going over some of the data that you released today, and you mentioned this goes back three seasons, and I'll just, for the purposes of the economy of time, focus on last season specifically, by way of penalties assessed based on comments made for various reasons. 5 based on race, 1 on religion, 16 on sexual orientation, 3 on disability, and 172 based on gender. Do any of those numbers, like, should any of those numbers, I mean, it's awful, so they should all surprise us. But is there anything in here that, from your point of view, significantly stands out that you can address right away?
Well, I think they're all numbers we should be concerned about, because one incident is too many. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we know the numbers on race and religion likely don't reflect lived experiences in the game, because we're hearing from people in which incidences happen outside the earshot of the referees. Certainly, the gender number is large, and that is partly because we put a real stronger emphasis on that this year in terms of the language that was being penalized under this rule that might have been penalized under different rules historically. And so it stems from making a comment such as "you play like a girl" to more graphic type gender-based language. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it certainly is a concern, as is any language that is of that nature. And so we need to focus on that as well.
How do you talk to kids about, how do you talk to players in the GTHL about these issues? Or is that right to the teams themselves? Is that their responsibility?
Well, we certainly provide, we have policies and rules and regulations, educational materials that the teams have to go through prior to the start of the season. 2 years ago we started a program around gender issues and things of that nature. So there is some work being done, but it's clearly not enough. I certainly can tell you that every single one of the players that have been penalized under all of these rules has had a personal conversation with either me or with the with a disciplinary committee or both. So that's an opportunity to really clearly stipulate the league's position on it and the sanctions that come with that. So I think we need to look at the way we handle both sides of it and be better at it.
Anthony?
This is one of the many questions that were, you know, mailed in by a lot of my hockey parents here, and they've read that OHF framework that was just released on return to play, and it didn't really mention anything with regards to tryouts or signing cards. Do you have any update on when tryouts would be, and will players be signing cards for next season?
Anthony, great question. I think that it's still an evolving process, like everything else in the province is right now. There is a stage plan that's been developed in terms of getting kids back to hockey before, sooner rather than later, so that they don't have to wait until it's large group participation before they can get back to the game. So there is no time frame set to the phases. Obviously, we have to watch closely and abide by the recommendations of the provincial government and local health authorities on that. And once they give us the green light to move on to the next stage, we're prepared to do that and putting a framework in. And we want kids back on the ice playing and participating in games and trying out for their teams as soon as it's safe for them to do so.
Berkey?
Yeah, it's such an important link in the chain. I think people we're all focused on when the NHL gets back, but the CHL, U Sports, I mean, all the levels of the pyramid are so important. It's vital that we get these kids back playing as soon as it's safe for them to do so, like you said, Scott.
Yeah, there's no question, Brian. I'm hearing from parents whose kids are, you know, because they've been in a situation where they've been isolated away from their friends and that they're looking as hockey, the return to hockey as an outlet for their children, even just from a mental health perspective, and getting them back out and socializing and participating in physical activity where they may have been, you know, sitting in front of a TV playing video games because they can't interact with people, and playing video games communally with their friends as opposed to physically interacting with them. So there are lots of issues and challenges around that. So it's a very difficult balance between, you know, making sure we're doing the proper thing within the community and preventing the spread of the virus and making sure the best, safest environment for the kids, but at the same time, making sure we're providing an outlet for them physically and mentally and emotionally.
All of that information is available, linked on the GTHL's Twitter, OMHA, as well as from the OHF, which oversees all of this, the return to play protocol for kids and for parents in the upcoming season, whatever. I mean, the one question that, and I'm sure you've, Scott, you've had this from a lot more people than I have, but the one thing that I keep hearing from parents is, okay, that's all fine and dandy, but when can we play games again? And I keep saying, get that out of your head. Like, would I be correct if I said to parents, because this is going to involve the mental shift here for a lot of parents who just want to see games and cheer and look at the score and read game sheets. From your point of view, does the mental shift for a parent need to move away from games and into strictly development for next season with an eye to returning to quote-unquote normal in the 21-22 season?
Well, I think, Jeff, development is always, in my view, first and foremost when it comes to young hockey players. And, you know, a good friend of all of ours, Pat Flatley, once described to me that he approached coaching like a teacher would, in that the practice is preparation and learning and the game is the test. And I think for a long time we focused too much on the test part and not enough on the practicing and learning. So coming into next year, I think we're going to see a shift in that out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And I think that we you know, I understand the desire for games and such, but I think we have to do it in a way that's safe for all the participants. So we'll take advantage of the opportunity to get kids back on the ice as early as possible when it's safe to do so, and focus on skills. And that in and of itself may change a shift in the views of people in terms of the value that skill development has.
Scott, I referenced Kim Davis off the top of this, and just a remarkable woman, and she spoke at your summit last year, and there was one quote that really stuck with me, and I want to sort of personalize this and ask you about it. She said, it's not until we're comfortable having uncomfortable conversations that we're really going to make legitimate progress. From a personal point of view, I mean, getting comfortable with uncomfortable conversations is hard for everybody. But over the past little while, how have you been in handling, you know, getting comfortable with uncomfortable conversations?
Well, I had the good fortune of working along with Kim and a gentleman by the name of Marlo Stoudemire, who worked on behalf of the NHL and Detroit Red Wings in Detroit, helping them with similar challenges. And, you know, I had a lot of conversations, particularly with Marlo, about that, about dealing with that from a personal perspective. And, you know, I grew up in Scarborough in a very diverse community and went to a high school that was very diverse. And I'm still realizing I have lots of blind spots. And I've come to the realization you have to recognize first that you have blind spots when it comes to other people's life's experience. And I learn and continue to learn day to day. And I'm learning that we have to have these difficult conversations because it's the only way real change is going to happen. And we have to listen very closely to what people have to say about their experiences. And sometimes it's in emotional situations. Other times it's through a very constructive phone call. And I've had many of both of those the last 10 days. And I've learned from every single one of them. And I think I've come away in every instance with a better perspective, not the complete perspective, but a better perspective of the challenges our organization faces.
You know, it took me personally, Scott, some time to come around to really understanding deeply the value of something like social capital theory, the idea that with many different faces and voices around the table, it allows the best ideas to come to the fore and also allows those ideas to travel quicker. How proactive will the GTHL be on things like social capital theory? You've already sort of hinted at that so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the two of the strategic pillar groups that are working on the information that came out of our summit in November focus on organizational excellence and back to the community concepts. So both of those are working on initiatives around creating a diverse leadership structure in our organization. And I think putting everybody together at our summit was, you know, a very broad-based group of people from other sports, other backgrounds, other community groups, things of that nature. And I think this continues on the work with this independent committee, where we've asked them also to give us some recommendations on how, as an organization, we can get stronger by becoming more diverse.
Anthony, I'm going to give the last word to you.
Okay, I had some parents ask me about equipment modification, and even one parent asked me, does their son or daughter have to wear a motorcycle helmet next season?
So I can say at this stage, Anthony, there's been no information coming forward about modifications to equipment. Everything I've read and been told about at this point in time, there's no, we've had lots of questions around shields versus cages and things of that nature. As far as we know, there's no scientific evidence that one is more protective than the other. So we're not looking at equipment modifications. I think you're going to be seeing more modifications around people coming in and out of facilities, how they get dressed in the facility, how they're positioned on the ice, how they're positioned on the bench, things of that nature, as opposed to equipment modifications. And they only need to wear a motorcycle helmet if they're riding a motorcycle.
and get used to dressing your kids at home?
That's a real possibility, yes.
Awesome. This has been a delight. Look forward to catching up sooner than later. Exciting new measures, Scott. Thanks for sharing them with us here today.
We really appreciate your time, guys. I appreciate it very much.